What could be a bigger current event than everything going on in the NBA right now? And for that, we turn to our preeminent voice on hoops at FDH, our senior editor, Jason Jones, joining us live from the FDH Western office in Denver. How are you tonight, my man?
Not too bad, I guess, under the circumstances.
Well, here's the thing, Jason. Tonight, at the very least, we're going to be able to educate people. We're going to be able to set them straight on stuff because there's a lot of ignorant stuff floating around in this story from people who don't understand the nitty-gritty, if you will, of what's been happening in Cleveland for the last 7 years and how it provides context and background for everything that we've seen and why people are as angry as they are and why people, I think, should be as angry as they are. We'll get into that. On a larger level, it's nice where, because you and I have these microphones here, we can at least feel like we're accomplishing something. We can at least feel like in some tiny, tiny way we've helped get a little pound of flesh. I feel like I did in the previous segment here. I just sicked TMZ on LeBron's bike event that he's having in Akron next month here. According to the executive producer of the TMZ on TV show, there'll be boots on the ground there to document LeBron's reception at his first big event in his hometown. So I like to feel like I accomplished a little something there, Jason.
Yeah, and let me just that's great, by the way. Let me just set a relative record straight here. By no means is this just a tough moment. I mean, I'm actually at the point where I have to rely on my relative intelligence and ability to adapt because it's so bad that, you know, I've got the SB pre-show on right now, and I don't even want to look at basketball right now, and that's the game that I grew up playing and played at a relatively high level to a degree, and I'm looking so forward to football because this type of nonsense just doesn't happen in football. And it's tough. You know, maybe in 5 months when the NBA kicks back off again, maybe that'd be a different story. But right now, I will be happy to help shed some light on some of the reasons why this isn't just a guy leaving town.
Well, there are so many different angles to this, so many different reasons that, as you say, this could only happen in the NBA, not the NFL or any other sport, and we'll talk about those. But an analogy that I made tonight, and I feel like I got at least one more column in me for churning out on the site here on this subject, and I don't want to be the guy that can't stop, you know, beating the drum or talking about this or whatever, but it's still A, out there as a big subject that people are talking about, and B, something where people need to get set straight. I even linked to something on Twitter, the biggest ignoramus I've ever seen, who wrote for Bleacher Report, probably not a coincidence there, who said that Cleveland owes LeBron an apology for the reaction. I want to say this because this is the analogy that I've come up with, that what we've seen, it's essentially a merger of two TV shows here, The Sopranos and Entourage, the story of the last 7 years in town here with everything that happened. LeBron essentially is Tony Soprano. If you look at how Tony Soprano conducted himself when he had a bust-out operation, a business that he'd muscled in on, LeBron put his boys in the front office. His boys were displacing team employees and employees of flagship media organizations off of the team charter. He had the run of the place. He conducted it, you know, as Tony Soprano would one of his satellite businesses. And the Entourage part of it, really, the guys around him, Mav Carter and Rich Paul and whatever, they like to hold themselves up like they are people who are accomplished in their own right. But this is where the Entourage part comes in. These are basically three guys named Turtle. They are all collectively the equivalent of the lowliest guy of the Vinny Chase Entourage on Entourage here. Bag carriers and everything like that. They're given titles. They're given status. They're given these other things here they can put on their resume. But essentially, these are guys who never accomplished a damn thing past high school aside from carrying the bags of LeBron James. Now, because of the society we live in, that enriches them. That's a commentary on our sick society, I'm afraid, that they're able to leech their way onto this. But let's just cut the pretense here in terms of what they are. But essentially, they were put in there in the positions here. They were on Dan Gilbert's payroll, which I hate to say it. Gilbert probably evaded the salary cap a little bit in that way. But, hey, whatever you got to do to keep the guy happy. And that was the world we lived in. All of us in town bit our tongues. There were things I didn't necessarily always like. But I got to admit, I mean, I went along with the program. A lot of us did because – That's the world we live in. That's the leverage this guy had, and he chose to. And I think we all didn't want to believe he would take and take and take and take and take and then leave. And I think that's where the pain comes in. When everybody says about, oh, you know, it's the way that he left, whatever, it's more than that. He'd have to be Superman turning back the hands of time 7 years in order to not have conducted himself like he did for 7 years, for this not to have hurt like it did.
Well, absolutely. And you know, there's so many things we'll probably get to later, but that I look back on and say, wow, I really was so taken and convinced that I was willing to create excuses for him, while at that time convincing myself that they were not excuses, they were reasons. Look, having buddies on the payroll is absolutely childish, for starters, and is something that we just said, hey, it's part of the package deal. We'll sit by and take that. And somewhere we knew that highly qualified, college-educated, professional people were getting a backseat to it. It was very similar to the backlash you heard from other players when Michael Jordan went to go play baseball. And they said, hey, it's great that he's getting to live out his dream, but, you know, there's some legitimate guy who spent his life playing baseball who just got the shaft. And it was a similar kind of situation. And then it's one of many that we just said, you know what, we'll let it pass because whatever makes him happy. And I don't know about your sources, Rick, but I've been hearing some things that leads us all the way up to about 6 to 8 weeks ago, still pulling strings and still being an influence in the front office with no intention of playing through.
You know, and that's the worst part of it, too. And we're hearing a lot of uneducated crap from people about LeBron didn't owe you anything. He was a free agent. Nobody's questioning the legal part. It's the funniest thing is, for people who are being intellectually dishonest, there's something that was linked off of the Akron Beacon Journal website called the Akron Law Cafe. Some guy who's a pompous law professor who likes to argue stupid crap. LeBron James had a constitutional right to do what he did. Nice straw man there, egghead, okay? I haven't heard one person say he didn't have the constitutional right to do this. Having said that, we're getting into moral rights here. We're getting into moral rights again. You take and you take and you take, and you impose on Dan Gilbert in every single way possible for 5 years, and Gordo Gund 2 years prior to that. I'm not the biggest Gordo Gund guy, but I have sympathy for anybody that's had to deal with this act. And as you said, to not have any intention of coming back, there might have been at least a small intention, whatever, but he pretty much knew this was coming. It's reprehensible in that regard. And I will say this, as much as Jesse Jackson is a worm and everything else like that, at least he's saying, and I'm going to say this, and it may not be popular, he's saying what a lot of people just don't have the nards to say. Because when you're hearing this, when I'm listening to black talk shows, and I'm hearing people defend LeBron James for reasons other than he can do whatever he wants to do, you know what that is? That's a little bit of hate whiteyism that you don't have the balls to talk about. Jesse Jackson hates whitey, and at least he's putting it out there. There's a lot of people that are defending LeBron for no other reason than he upset Dan Gilbert. And it's not popular for me to say that, but I will say that. And Jesse Jackson, as ridiculous as he is, at least said what a lot of people don't say, and won't say when you call him on it. I got into a back and forth with a guy on Twitter on Friday who said that Spike Lee wasn't playing the race card for saying 40 acres and a mule, and that wasn't the race card. And he goes, you're injecting race into it by talking about that. See, that's the intellectual dishonesty we're talking about here, Jason, with all these people that want to defend LeBron. I hate ignorance more than anything, and this is bringing out the ignorant in so many people.
See, and let's just call it what it is here. In a roundabout sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
Al Harrington just agreed to terms with the Nuggets today.
Okay.
No one in New York has any problem with that. Mike Miller signs with the Heat along with this big three. Nobody has a problem with that. Both those gentlemen, white and black, no problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Race is really not the issue here. Race has never been the issue. And for someone to come out, and granted, don't get me wrong, the Jesse Jackson comments, if you do sort of look through and sort of put your x-ray glasses on and read through all the hyperbole and BS, there is something to be explained there, and there is a valid point to be made. However, we shouldn't have to filter through all the race-loaded issue. White, black, or otherwise, it is not about race. If Dwayne Wade left Miami to go to Chicago, it would not have been about race,
mm-hmm.
because we would have seen it on a headline in the newspaper, on a website, on the local news, on SportsCenter. Dwayne Wade would not have called a huge television event that would be the highest rated non-mainstream news story in the history of Nielsen ratings to say no to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. Race,
exactly.
Not race, really couldn't give a damn.
Right.
And, you know, I'll be honest and I'll say something that most people won't say in regards to how Cleveland would have reacted.
Mm-hmm.
People say that it's only because of the way he said it. No, let's get one thing straight. Cleveland would have been pissed no matter what.
Right.
We would have been ass on a stove, raving, mad, pissed no matter what. But there's a difference between, hey, guys, sorry, I decided to go another route, but let me tell you that up front. We can have a nice discussion and blah, 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 but I'm still ultimately leaving. That is different, remarkably different than what actually took place. And that is sad, but the fact of the matter is once you get beyond he's leaving, it's the spectacle on top of all of the stuff, and I say this because it's a family show,
mm-hmm.
all of the stuff that has slowly started to trickle out, that some of us in the that have worked there or still work there and know for a fact, firsthand account, the types of stuff that was going on. Maybe he didn't know that stuff was going to come out, but it's going to,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's what, you know, a week later we're still fuming mad about. Yeah, the team's not going to be as good, okay? But we can handle that. In Cleveland, we can handle that.
Yeah.
The big issue is how it was done, and that it was done with such a level of disregard and disrespect for the leaps and bounds that were afforded to him.
Yeah, and the composition of the franchise. His thumb was on the scale the whole time here in terms of everything. It was, he held this threat over their head. I'll leave if I'm not happy with the moves that you're going to make. They got themselves into as much of a win now thing as they could be over the period of time. He's done more recruitment of free agents in 6 days down in Miami than he did in all of the years that he was here. You go back to last summer, not that Trevor Ariza's the end-all be-all by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a perfect case example of somebody who was interested in coming here, but was like, hey, do I want to do this if LeBron's not going to be here? And LeBron at the time, and he basically said to him at the time, well, you know, honestly, Trevor, you're taking your chances, which, you know, maybe we should have read more into that at the time. Maybe that's on us. But anyways, his loyalty to this team was never reciprocated in that way. Here's the thing. And I never, as I've said before on the show, I never bought into the local boy stuff, never thought that we should fawn over him because he's the local boy come to save us. No. My attachment was he's the greatest player in the world and he's playing for my team. I root for him between the lines, end of story. So I never got invested in him in the way that so many people did who now are really feeling betrayed. God, if you think I feel betrayed, how about the people who actually idolize this guy? Boy, are they taking it hard. I can only imagine. But anyways, When you look at it, had he conducted himself differently over 7 years, had he not put his boys in the front office and imposed and taken and taken and taken, I keep going back to those words, had he not done that, had he not tried to micromanage the front office with the threats of leaving and, oh, you better do this if you want me to stick around, had he not done that, but basically just said to the front office, look, you know, do what you got to do, make the moves you got to make, whatever. I'm a player, you're management, do what you got to do. Had he been up front for 7 years, had he not laid it on so thick about, I understand the misery of this city and I will not, you know, I'm dedicated to winning a championship to end the misery, blah, blah, blah. It's the way he conducted himself over time leading up to this. I would have been upset if he went anywhere just because he can't erase what he did over 7 years. It's not that we still owe him, It's not that it's a territorial thing because he grew up in Akron. It's because there's an implied moral debt when you conduct yourself as he has over this period of time, and then you screw over the ownership and the team and you leave anyways.
Yeah. The idea of he owes us something or we owe him something, let's cut right through that right now. The city of Cleveland, its fans, the management of the team, the ownership of the team, don't owe him a damn thing, because as you're reflecting on moral debt, I'm suggesting just the opposite from the Cleveland Cavalier organization side of it. They have given him so much more than any team ever would any superstar on the planet now or then, period. So if anybody owes anybody anything, it's not the organization owing him. And again, yes, he has the right to do what he wants to, but at some point, regardless of whether the news would have leaked out or not, he owes not the fans so much, but Dan Gilbert, management, and the organization, he owed them, if nothing else, a clear-cut understanding of what his intention was. As a matter of fact, it would have been nice, and I'm not saying he had to have done it, but it would have been nice, it would have been the gentlemanly and respectful thing to do, to try to get some of these non-top five free agents maybe considering thinking about Cleveland, and then we cross that bridge after the fact. But you absolutely are compelled to give a little bit of notice, a little bit of an indication as to what's going on, and not drop this on the organization as it was done. But as far as this moral debt concept, absolutely. Things were paid. They may not have been monetary, but exception, influence, veto power, if you will. And I know that one's never been officially quantified, but there's so much that he was given, so much so that when he went to visit Chicago, and I don't know if you noticed this, Rick, or anybody listening, he went to Chicago, and everybody was sold he was going to Chicago, and there was no two ways about it. He had a meeting with Chicago, and then we never heard Chicago ever again. And the reason for that was he sat down with the ownership and management there, and they said, hey, we'd love to have you. We'll pay you all this money, and it'll be great, and we'll win titles. But your friends will not get jobs. Your mother will not have a place on the plane. We didn't give that sort of leniency and levity to Mr. Michael Jordan, so you're not going to get it either. And the second that happened, no more Chicago. So hopefully, I don't know what Riley's promised him, but I hope that over time he realizes that there was something here. Now, I'd like to have thought that maybe at some point he would have looked at it as an ongoing lifetime contract, that because they gave him so much leniency and so much influence on everything across the board, that is something he was never going to get anywhere else. And if not, he shouldn't have squandered away that influence.
That's true.
You know, by some of these players that clearly he okayed to come in and put us into a position that they're in now.
I said to Evan Roberts of FAN a couple weeks ago, I said, I'm going to be really pissed if he goes somewhere else, citing the better chance to win thing, because he's been the co-GM here for his entire time. And his fingerprints are on this. And how can you then look somebody in the eye and say, hey, sucks to be you for trusting me. You know, I just, and Evan Roberts said, he said, if he goes somewhere else, be prepared to be disappointed, because of course he'll cite a better chance to win. And he saw that more clearly than I did on that. I give him credit. I will say also what you said about Reinsdorf. I'm going to sack up here and say this is not one of my prouder moments. When I heard about that, I went on Twitter. I'm not a big Jerry Reinsdorf fan in the first place, by the way.
No, but either.
I went on and I taunted him. Hey, pissing off the entourage. Yeah, that'll really get you somewhere with LeBron. You know what? I mean, he was taking a principled stand on that. I mean, and I guess that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about here. I didn't okay everything that LeBron did over a period of time. Some of the stuff I defended him on, I thought the Yankees hat thing was stupid. I thought some of the other stuff. Now, I didn't realize it. Like, when he went to the Browns-Cowboys game, I didn't realize the Browns apparently went out of their way to be good with him, hook him up with stuff, whatever, and he still went and flaunted his Cowboys stuff at them and was rude to team employees. I've heard about that subsequently. But I guess that's a good point. There are all kinds of things that are going to come out, and these are things that, I mean, he did not take that into consideration. There are a lot of things. I won't cite who this is exactly, because they might not want this on the air, but it was there's a local sports bar in town here, a pretty significant one, and they got approached to throw a going away party for LeBron. And the owner of the place, who's a very principled individual, said, take your business elsewhere, which shows a great amount of arrogance to me that they think they could still show their faces in town here. And I would have loved to have been back in the kitchen, by the way. I certainly would have applied some lessons from the movie Waiting if I were back in the kitchen. When that
you would have called a quick staff meeting back there and asked for the thumbs up, thumbs down.
Perhaps the owner was a little bit healthy. He was a little bit hasty, I should say. He could have sent them all to Miami with a good case of food poisoning. But again, he's a principled individual. But you look at stuff like that again. And my comment on Facebook to him was, hey, you just saved your wait staff from a 3% tip. Because, you know, we've heard stories that we've heard that, you know, bad tipper, which, again, I've said this before in the show, if you've ever been a poor person, which I really haven't been, but I have empathy anyways, he's been poor. How does he not have empathy for people? I don't understand that.
Well, that's the funny part about that little aspect is I can say, now, I have not been, like, live on the street poor, but I have definitely gone paycheck to paycheck before. And I've also seen the other end of the spectrum. And I can say that, as a matter of habit, when it comes to tipping, I'm more like in the 20 to 25% range, just because I understand that there's a working class group of people that have jobs that I think suck far more than mine. So they've earned it. And to have the kind of money LeBron has, there's no reason that he shouldn't be making that waiter or waitress's night in one meal. And that's clearly not his practice.
Yeah, and there are all kinds of these things. We've heard bad tipper, we've heard this, even before all the recent stuff. And the rumor that dare not speak its name, we've heard plenty of stuff about Gloria James, and some of it's been on the record, like her kicking out the back of the cop car windows when she got pulled over for the DUI. That was on the record. So as far as his mama being a train wreck, we knew about that. There are a lot of things, but this is the great thing, you know? It's all going to come out now. And this is something where, you know, on many, many, many levels, this whole decision, okay? When you look at that, when you look at the fact that he nuked his brand, he just absolutely, it is a smoking mess. He's more famous than he's ever been, but Hitler was pretty famous too, okay? There is, you want the right kind of fame if you're going to sell products and be an endorser and all of that. He has absolutely gone and practiced his Second Amendment rights on his own foot, and I find that delicious to watch. But it's a thing here where I keep coming back to the show Entourage. And there's a scene, I don't even remember exactly what it was from, but the super agent Ari Gold. And ironically, the man that Ari Gold is based on, Ari Emanuel, helped broker the TV special, which there's all kinds of ironies here. But I remember Ari Gold with his star client, Vinny Chase. I don't even remember the context. I just remember Jeremy Piven's voice. You haven't thought this through. You haven't thought this through. And that's a thing where so many things about this as far as how it was done, as far as leaving when you've incurred this large moral debt and people are going to hate you forever, as far as the fact nobody makes a distinction between Cleveland and Akron. We talked to the gentleman from TMZ before, and I think he thought I was smoking crack when I told him that LeBron thinks people make a distinction between Akron and Cleveland. All these things, you know, you even in the inner circle, you can't tell this guy anything. He is just impervious. The mind is closed. He is convinced of everything here. And again, I'm just getting off on that part of it, Jason.
Yeah.
Because how is that going? How's that going to go when he goes down to Miami and has to mesh with people if you can't tell him anything?
Well, and you know, that's one of many great, great observations. As someone in the media that goes out to the locker rooms, to the events, you cannot get within shouting distance of LeBron James without three forms of credentials. You can't say anything to him. You can't provoke him in any way, or you basically get written off. On top of that, as you say, he's surrounded by yes men. He absolutely is. Anything that he says goes. And you heard him say leading up to this whole situation that ultimately it will be his decision. It was always his decision. And it was never anyone else's place to influence anything other than that. I would love to have seen what those little meetings or dinners would have been like when he said, hey, I'm thinking about this, this, and this. What do you guys think? You know they came back with, yeah, it sounds great. Whatever you say, because you're awesome,
mm-hmm.
kind of approach, and that's going to be a problem. And here's my big issue with all of this. I personally believe that not everybody is intended to go to greener pastures or to the bigger markets. I don't necessarily think it always works in their favor. And this is a great case in that. He could have gone on, played his entire 15 to 20 year career in Cleveland, been the face of that franchise forever, had a Jordan-esque statue outside on Huron or whatever street that is. He could have ran for political office, and that would have been if he only had one or two titles.
Right.
And that would have been great. If more would have been better. But if he had done that and,
right.
and built it up the right way, and like Jordan, gone to a city that has never experienced basketball glory of any magnitude and built his own situation, lift the city up on his figurative shoulders, and so on and so forth, his legacy would have been intact like stone. He would have been unquestioned. He would have absolutely been a first ballot Hall of Famer, and people would have looked back and said, like they do of all of the greats, or at least that top five, or the Mount Rushmore, if you will, of the NBA Hall of Fame now, the Michael Jordans, the Magic Johnsons, the Larry Birds, and the Bill Russells. He would have been in that class. Now, if he goes to Miami and wins 5 to 10 titles, he's still not going to be in that class.
Right.
He is and forever will never touch that level. I don't care if he eclipses Jordan. I don't care if he eclipses Kobe. I don't care who he eclipses in titles and scoring titles and MVPs. It does not matter. He will always be looked at in this light. Very much like A-Rod. A-Rod is now a champion. He will always be thought of the guy that earned $250 million and confessed to performance-enhancing drugs, no matter what he does.
Right.
And what happens if it doesn't work? What happens if we find out that Kobe and Pau Gasol and Derek Fisher, Lamar Odom and Ron Artest is just a better blueprint than 3 of the top 10 best players in the NBA and a whole bunch of role players? What if he never wins one?
Right.
In Miami, and we go 5 years and they've never won, they go, wow, that is the most phenomenal team on paper the game has ever seen, and he still can't win. In Cleveland, if he had gone his whole career and never won, they would have said, well, it was a shame, but that guy was one hell of a player on all levels. He does this now, goes to Miami. If he doesn't come out of there with like 5-plus titles, then it's all for naught, and his legacy is even further diminished.
Agree completely. And I want to touch more in our next segment on matters of legacy and everything like that and how the future is going to view this. Last thing I want to mention to you before a break here, and it's interesting because you and I are in a lot of agreement on most of the stuff we've talked about here tonight. One of the interesting things in the dynamic with us over time here, there's only a 10-year gap between us, which I don't see as being necessarily that big, but it's interesting that sometimes there's a little bit of an old school, new school kind of, you know, thing there, you know, where you sometimes are on one side, I'm sometimes on the other side. I want to get your thoughts on this before we go to break here. That being the meetings he had with the teams, because it was commented on that he's a 25-year-old guy, but he shows up at these things. Jordan would have worn a suit. Jordan would have had a suit on. He's wearing T-shirt, shorts, sweats, whatever the case may be. This is how I take it, and I'm just doing a psychological read here because he wants to be Jordan. He's got the Jordan complex, but he's got the Jordan complex like I'm going to interpret Jordan for today. Like somebody would say to him, Jordan would have worn a suit to that. Yeah, but I'm Michael Jordan 2010. So I see that as him – you know, sort of putting that you know, suits are a bygone thing. Maybe that's how that generation would have done it. That's not necessarily how I roll. Maybe I'm making too much of it, but I see that as a little bit of a generational thing as far as him not showing up in the suits or anything like that. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that you set it up that way because as soon as, you know, Stern made the you got to wear a shirt and tie ruling, I don't even know what they call it, but the dress code issue, I thought, you know what, guys are not going to go there and wearing cheesy, you know, men's warehouse type suits. Mm-hmm. They're going to find a way to give it their own flavor and still be dressed up and look very nice. Mm-hmm. Great example of that, ironically enough, is Dwayne Wade and LeBron James in the regular season. Now, they don't wear the traditional three-piece suit, but they find a way to make it work, and you say, wow, they're nice dressed guys. Now, on occasion, they get out of control. But when this first came around and it became an issue of, again, from a Clevelander's perspective and making excuses, when we heard that he was not going to travel anywhere and all the teams were going to have to come to him, I was firmly under the assumption that basically what that meant was is that you're going to have to come to Cleveland to convince me not to stay in Cleveland. Like, he was already leaning towards Cleveland, but they would have to really woo him to get him away. And yeah. Then you see him wearing, you know, jeans and a T-shirt and athletic shoes walking into the building of choice. And even when it was going on, you know, I didn't really say much about it, but I thought, this is a professional meeting. You couldn't at least wear khakis and a polo shirt?
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, I would think that it would be in his best interest to wear, yeah, it's summer, maybe not a full-on suit, but definitely a shirt and a tie, dress pants and dress shoes.
Okay.
It is a professional meeting. This is not, hey, let's get together, you know, put some popcorn in the microwave and shoot the proverbial fill-in-the-blank.
Mm-hmm.
This was a professional meeting. It's kind of like when Brady Quinn got drafted and What's-His-Face was saying, it's an interview for a job, you should get a haircut. We are still watching these guys as professionals, and although I don't think he should have walked in there in a black and white penguin tux, there is a level of courtesy and respect that one shows in a professional setting, and he should have at least made an attempt to dress up a little bit.
Sure.
But by not doing so and allowing that to be okay is just one in a very, very long line of it's okay because it's you.
Well, you know what, and that's as we go to our mandated break that we got to take here. It's very interesting that you know, LeBron James on this has even lost his generational contemporary, Jason Jones. You know, a fellow new school kind of a guy. I mean, he went too far for you on that, Jason. That kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
Well, he went too far on a lot of things, and to be honest, I don't know that we have enough time in this show to do it all. But yeah, no. I am, for the record, for anyone that's listening that's not familiar with what you're referring to, Rick, I am one of those people that is more inclined to believe the players today are better than the players from yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and for tons of reasons. But this is one of those cases where the guy just, he's out of control in a nutshell.
Yeah, No question about it. He definitely is. On the other side here, we'll start to look a little bit ahead here and to matters of legacy, how the team is going to play on the floor next year, how the other teams in the league stack up. We certainly have some thoughts on that as well.